Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to be here. We're going to talk a little bit about Agile, Scrum, and Roundtable. Now, as you're watching everything that's going on up here, I kind of hope that turned out a little bit like an air show that I went, I attended years and years ago. I'm a huge aviation buff, and I was able to take my wife and kids to the last Naval Air Station air show at Miramar Naval Air Station. So it's the last Naval Air Show. And the very next year after that particular year, I believe it was 1998, they turned the Naval Air Station over to the Marines, so it's no longer Miramar. Of course, you may remember that's where Top Gun used to be. That's where it was filmed, and there was a big hangar there that said Top Gun and all that. So what happened was the Blue Angels took off. You know, they rotated, they were up, they were doing the show. It was awesome. Of course, it was just activity going right, left, and sideways, almost literally. Everything going on. They had the narrator that was up there that was just going through bullet point by bullet point. And then all of a sudden I noticed there was about a 30 to 45 second delay in the action. And it was just enough that you realized this is not as fast paced as we thought. Right about that time, the announcer came back on and said, "You may have noticed that there was a lull in the action. What is, we've had a mechanical problem with number four, which is the slot, which is basically you got the front guy, you know, but the slot had a mechanical problem. He had to land. He jumped into another aircraft we already had fueled up, and he's rejoined the Delta, and here they come." Now, it was very smooth, but if you kind of go back into what happened, these guys were on the radio, they developed a mechanical problem, the slot pulled out, landed, he jumps out of his aircraft. Now, these aircraft, they're F-18 Hornets, stripped down, very little weight, they want to be very nimble, they're old aircraft, but they're very nimble. So, when he jumps out of his aircraft, he jumps into the media aircraft, which is the two-seater that they use to fly all the people around, and you know, you watch them pass out on. So that's the aircraft. So he jumps into an airplane that's full of fuel, so there's probably another 300 pounds of fuel in the aircraft, plus it's got another ejection seat. So he's probably 1,500, 2,000 pounds heavier. He jumps right back in, and they fly the whole rest of the show. It was amazing. You could hardly tell anything was wrong. So hopefully you can hardly tell that we were having horrible problems up here with the video, and everything looks good now. That wasn't part of the original presentation, but I thought I would just add that. No extra charge. I'm Michael Solomon, and I'm going to be leading you through an Agile primer and how Roundtable fits in. So real quickly, how many of you guys already use Agile or Scrum, or you're actually doing it now? All right, so this primer is probably going to be a little bit of a, well, it's good information anyway. Ask questions as it comes up. I'm going to keep this very low level for those of you that may not use Agile. We're just going to talk about the philosophy. So here's the motivation for this particular talk. I am an OpenEdge Roundtable and security consultant, and also a PMP, project management professional. I'm sure some of you guys, does anybody else have their PMP? Oh, okay, so I can talk all about PMI, Project Management Institute, and their PMBOK, which is the Project Management Body of Knowledge, which basically says this is how you run a project. Well, the prevailing attitude for managing projects is all based on the linear waterfall model. We're going to come back to that a little bit later. So Agile is much more responsive. So I started thinking about what I do as a consultant. I really like working in OpenEdge. I like working in Roundtable. And currently, and also, I write a lot. And this is kind of the role that got me thinking about everything. I write computer science textbooks and courses for Jones and Bartlett. I also write PMP prep books. And I just finished the latest edition of a prep guide. And again, started thinking, boy, Roundtable should fit in somehow. Because currently I'm working on a long-term project in Florida with a company down there. And they are an Agile shop. But they don't use Roundtable. They use Progress, but they kind of, well, their tools are really not very OpenEdge friendly. Honestly, they use TFS. I'm not saying that Microsoft Team Foundation Server is bad. I'm sure there is a positive way and an open-edge friendly way you can implement it. My customer didn't choose to do it that way. So I've introduced Roundtable and said, hey, guys, why don't we use this for little tiny areas? But boy, it'd be nice if we could use it in a bigger role. And so as an integrator, because I kind of jump around a lot, I started wondering, is it possible for Roundtable to be Agile friendly? And of course, it was kind of, I just thought about it now. I should have had the light bulb and go boom, because that's exactly what happened to me. And that's where the thought for this particular talk came from. So the answer, can Roundtable be Agile friendly, is pretty much the whole rest of the presentation.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about what Agile is. Agile is a project methodology that originally derived from lean thinking. I didn't talk a lot about what lean thinking is, but the idea is we want to think about what we do professionally. What are the activities in which we engage, and which ones matter, which ones give us value back, and which ones don't? We want to focus on the value-added activities and basically don't do the other stuff. That's kind of Agile in a nutshell. So the focus is on identifying and then managing three different types of work. Is this noise annoying to you guys? Okay. I almost dislocated my shoulder. That's why. I was going to close it earlier, but it's kind of changed. Oh, much nicer. All right. So three different types of work. First off, there's customer value added work, which is the highest value work. This is work that you engage in, time you spend actually working on a deliverable. Now let's think about why you're in business. Whether you are a for-profit or not-for-profit organization, you are engaged in some sort of productive activity. This productive activity is to satisfy the needs of your customer. Your customers can be internal, they can be external, they can be paying you money, or they can just be part of the organizational structure. But regardless, everybody has a customer. So the idea is, to satisfy your customers, you have to give them some deliverable. Hopefully what they ask for, that's the goal. So any time that you spend on building a deliverable is customer value added work. Now sometimes you have to engage in business value added work, which are any activities that are necessary to maintain or conduct your business or perhaps achieve compliance. The company I work for is in the healthcare industry. Of course, we think healthcare, we think HIPAA. Well, there's lots of HIPAA things, but there's also, is anybody else in the healthcare space? All right, well, I'm batting 1,000 on these questions. Well, one of the big things too, and I won't spend any time on this, is ICD-9 versus ICD-10. Those are codes. Basically, if you've ever gotten an explanation of benefits from your insurance company and there's all these millions of codes, it's like you're a 849.33/R43 or whatever. There are codes that basically talk about your diagnosis, the treatment regimen, and all kinds of things. Well, the coding entities have decided that the existing 7,500 codes, I may be way off on that, was not enough, and so now there's 80,000. And we have to change our software to support the new. And the beauty of it is, it's not a one-to-many relationship. It's like one ICD-9 code may represent multiple ICD-10 codes, and then one new ICD-10 code may represent four or five old ICD-10. It's a many-to-many relationship. So anyway, we have to invest a lot of time in upgrading software to be able just to be compliant with federal regulations in that regard. And then lastly, we have checking your Facebook page, updating your status with a pithy new status today of, whatever. So that's non-value-added work. Anything that's wasted time or overhead of any type. So the idea, if you boil it all down, all Agile is trying to do is to basically say, put all your time into activities that have a positive return on investment. And don't do stuff that doesn't pay you back. That's basically it. The Agile Manifesto is a very simple document that was developed by a small group in a meeting that happened. I should have the dates actually when this happened, but it's a very small document. If you Google or use your favorite search engine to look up the Agile Manifesto, it's a one or two page read, very, very small. Basically, Agile values individuals and interactions over processes and tools. Now, Agile recognizes that everything in the right-hand column has value, but the left-hand column should have more value and more emphasis as we develop and engage in our business processes. So the idea is we care about people more than just the tools we put into play. And if you're thinking ahead, you're going to say, well, roundtable's a tool, right? Yeah, it is. It's not the most important part of the puzzle, but it's an important part. Agile also values working software over comprehensive documentation. If you have the choice of going to your customer and saying, yeah, here's some software that works, it'll do what you want, or here is a book that describes what we're going to write for you and you're going to love it, obviously working software is better. Now, working software, by the way, should have some measure of documentation that is sufficient to empower the customer to use it. So we don't say documentation is bad. We could just say software has more value than just documentation. Agile also values customer collaboration over contract negotiation. The idea here is that we want to engage with the customer throughout the entire process, as opposed to simply say, tell me what you want, and then we'll make sure that we use our legalese to give you what we want to and make you think that it's actually what you wanted in the first place. And by the way, if it wasn't perfect, it's not our fault, we have a contract. If the customer is involved, the customer will take ownership earlier in the process, and quite honestly, it's harder, although not impossible, it's harder for customers that are involved to complain quite so much. But doggone it, they'd still do. But at least you have something to stand on. And then lastly, Agile values responding to change over following a plan. How many times have you guys worked on projects where you're having to do something stupid just because the plan says you have to do this today, but it adds no value? Agile basically says, no, let's respond to change as necessary. Okay, so the difference is from the waterfall method. And this slide could be many slides. This is a very, very tiny summary. The idea of the waterfall method is very similar to what I mentioned the Project Management Institute says. The way to manage a project traditionally is that you do everything up front. You initiate the project, which basically gets authority and funding. Then we plan the project. And in fact, if you were to study the PMBOK, the Project Management Body of Knowledge, you will find that of the 47 processes, 24 or 26 of them are all on planning the project. In other words, you do that before the executing process group. So in the waterfall method, you plan everything up front. Now, I will also say that traditional project management does understand the concept of progressive elaboration, to where you plan as much as you can, and then when you get into the execution and controlling or monitoring controlling phase, sometimes you blow out some more details because you learn as you go, and that's fine, but you still plan everything up front. All work has to conform to the plan. If it's not in the plan, it is called gold plating. It is out of scope. We don't do anything that's not in the plan. Even if it's a great idea, we're not going to do it. The activities are typically organized as linear processes, which means that developers finish their coding on a particular module, sometimes a very large module, and then they throw it over the fence to the QA folks, then throws it over the fence and moves downstream, and it's a very linear process. Now, we still see this linear mechanism in Agile, but it's a very short line, and it actually occurs simultaneously as a lot of other things are occurring. Activities organized, linear phase, and then the idea is we want to minimize variance from the plan, because the plan is God. Agile, or Scrum, and we're going to use these terms intermittently. Agile is the philosophy, Scrum is an implementation, effectively. Your work is only planned for each sprint, and sprints are typically 2 to 4 weeks. You can have longer sprints, but normally we recommend a sprint as a unit of a develop or activity for about 2 to 4 weeks. The work is accomplished, or work accomplished determines the releases, not some arbitrary date. Yes, sir?
Yeah, that's really the difference. Some hits some threshold completion, then you shift, right?
I'm sorry.
Just kind of hit that again, hit that point again. Some hits some threshold completion, the software hits some threshold completion, that determines the date.
Correct.
Exactly,
and that's a great clarification. You're absolutely correct. The threshold of completion of the product dictates the release date, not an artificial date that was planned in the beginning. Is that
right? Yeah, I would take the artificial out, some date that was, okay.
Good point. Yeah. Okay. So strike the artificial. So a date that was planned prior, and there are some very fine points. And I know that you guys, there's a few guys back there that are very active in Agile, and I encourage you to throw clarifications out.
Yeah.
This is a very high level, and Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, and that's the difficulty. It's almost like, I don't have an appropriate analogy, but we see that over and over again. Every time I run into an Agile, there are Agile shops, and then there's a whole lot of Agile-ish shops. And a lot of people will say, yeah, we're Agile-ish. And the idea is they're just trying to increase the rate of iteration as opposed to embracing the Agile philosophy. It's a big philosophy change. If you're so used to driving to a date, it's a big philosophy change. Does that address your
Yes, exactly.
And the sprints involve the entire team. Our teams are relatively small. It's typically 5 to 9, I will say ish there, because it can be a little bit larger, a little bit smaller, depending on your activities. And finally, adaptability that increases customer value is encouraged. Now that, you take a traditional project manager and you put that in front of him or her, and normally it's like, the first time it's like, this is bad, naughty, evil in the traditional project management world. This is called gold plating or scope creep. But the idea is that as you learn more about the product and you move forward and the customer becomes more and more engaged, as it makes sense and you can realize more return on your investment by making changes, it makes a whole lot more sense to change than to stay on a path that takes you farther off the final course. One example in I'll go through this in. Again, once back to the aviation analogy, and I don't think I have any more aviation analogies because they get a little tedious. Not to me, though. But if you're flying a small aircraft, a lot of you guys have probably seen or heard something about autopilot. You ever thought about what an autopilot is? It's actually kind of, it can be really complex depending on how many axes you have, but bottom line, let's just look at an autopilot that does heading, it controls heading or it maintains heading. Effectively, if I take off from an airport anywhere around here, and I want to, let's say, I want to fly out to where Jeff lives, so I'm going to fly over to Southern California. Well, you don't just take off, point your nose there, and just kick back. That's not going to work. Eventually, what's going to happen is there'll be little winds, it'll go left and right in different points. Depending on what altitude you are, you'll be pushed off your course. And if you fly, especially if you do get your pilot's license and you're flying around, you're having lots of fun, the first few times you're not paying attention. Well, you're paying attention, but not so much. You realize in a few minutes, you can be a mile or two off. Actually, I did most of my flight training in Southern California, and I was flying one of my cross-country solos, and I asked for flight following through SoCal Approach, and they went, 757 EX radio. You realize that you're in Camp Pendleton's airspace? Oh, actually, I didn't pick up on that one. I actually just clipped it. It was before 9/11. It was not a big deal. I just turned and got back out. The idea is, if you monitor, and that's what an autopilot does, it wasn't a big deal like that. If you monitor multiple times a second, that's all that an autopilot does, effectively. Basically says, here's where I'm supposed to be, am I on target? Am I on the right path, the flight path? If I'm not, I'm going to make a real tiny flight correction. But if you don't only check once every 30 minutes, you can be miles and miles off, and you have to make much larger flight corrections to get back on the path. That's the idea of Agile, is the ability to make many more small changes, adaptability, that does respond or does allow you to enjoy higher return on investment. All right, the goal is not to convince you that Agile is awesome, and I'm probably doing too much of trying to do that a little bit too hard. But here's basically how Agile and Scrum kind of look from a picture standpoint. Scrum is an iterative and incremental Agile software development framework for managing product development. So when you hear Agile, in many cases, Scrum is actually what they're referring to. Agile is the philosophy, Scrum is the framework to implement Agile. There are other frameworks, Scrum is the most popular. Basically what happens is you start off with a product backlog. A product backlog is just a list of features, things that you want in the product. In many cases, they're expressed as user stories. We'll talk about that in just a minute. When you start a sprint, by the way, the product backlog, effectively the product owner, we'll talk about the roles in a minute, the product owner just takes all these guys and sorts them, high priority to low priority. And then you take the highest priority items off the product backlog, whatever you think you can finish in 2 weeks, that becomes your sprint backlog. That's your to-do list for your sprint. Then you iterate in the sprint 2 to 4 weeks-ish, and you have a meeting at least once every 24 hours in general cases that results in a deliverable. So that's kind of like the picture of what Agile Scrum is all about. I was careful where you could go find these nice little pictures in Intellisys or Intellius. So the Scrum elements, there's three components or three primary Scrum elements. There are roles, activities, and artifacts. The roles, primary roles in Scrum, would be the product owner, the Scrum Master, and then the team members. We're going to talk about each of these individually in the next few slides. The activities, the stuff that actually happened, involves sprint planning, the daily scrum, your daily meeting, sprint demo, and retrospective. And finally, the artifacts are the things that we either produce or we produce from or that help us keep track of what we're doing, which would include the product backlog, the sprint backlog, again, feature lists, the burn down chart, I'll show an example of what that would look like, and the working product. Now, not every Scrum definition includes the working product as a Scrum artifact, and there's two different philosophies. Some look at it as the working product is the output or the result of Scrum, not an artifact of Scrum, but you can look at it either way. It is the result of a sprint. So the roles would include the product owner. The product owner is a subject matter expert, should know what he or she is categorizing, prioritizing. The product owner defines and gathers all the requirements from the stakeholders, and so there has to be some interaction there, going to the stakeholders, asking questions, understanding what the needs are, and then prioritizing those. And the priorities are always set at the beginning of every sprint or at the end of the previous sprint, either way. And the product owner is responsible for return on investment, for making sure that there's a positive ROI for all activities. The Scrum Master is probably most similar, if you had to relate the Scrum Master to the traditional product manager or project manager, excuse me, but there's a lot of differences. The Scrum Master is effectively a coach and a gatekeeper. A coach in that he or she provides guidance and education to all the team members, making sure that they embrace the Scrum philosophy, don't fall back into old habits, and also acts as a gatekeeper. The gatekeeper has a lot of different meanings, but in this context, what we mean is that the Scrum Master is responsible for protecting the team from outside resources or outside impediments and from removing internal impediments. So anytime there's something that degrades the performance of a team member, the Scrum Master is responsible for clearing the way and allowing that team member to get back onto the customer value added tasks. All right, activities are also referred to in many cases as time boxes because everything in Scrum has time associated with it. The activities involve sprint planning. It occurs at the very beginning of every sprint, and there's a very short amount of time. A lot of charts that you'll look at breakdown put about 5% of the total time towards sprint planning. So it's not a lot of time. You basically just take the sprint backlog or develop the sprint backlog and then make implement the appropriate plan to make sure you can get it done within the sprint category. Now we constantly say sprints are normally 2 to 4 weeks. It's not recommended that that's a variable number. Your organization should determine what the sprint length is, sprint duration, and stick with generally fixed length sprints. Now it's possible to have variable length sprints, but in most cases, most organizations will choose something in there, either 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, and stick with that. In the organization I'm working with, they try to do 2 week sprints, and it's not. Yeah. I'm not a Scrum Master. I'm not the one that's letting the times go. But there are some sprints that have run for 3 months, and it's just like, yeah. It's like, why? It needs to stop. The product owner, however, builds this sprint backlog during sprint planning. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that. Actually, at 6 easy steps we're going to get to in a minute on how to conduct Scrum, and step number 5 is stop. So we'll get there in a second. So the daily Scrum, you've probably heard about this, is a stand-up meeting. The idea is no more than 15 minutes, and each team member is asked 3 questions. What did you do yesterday? What are you going to do today? Are there any impediments? This is not a problem-solving time, and it's also not a report to the Scrum Master. This is a time where the team gets visibility into what other team members are doing, did do, and what the impediments are. Quite frequently, I'll find in Scrum that somebody will go, oh yeah, well, I can't do this, and what happens is somebody else on the team will go, oh yeah, well you can just go over here, and this was done yesterday. So it's an exchange of information opportunity. And then next to last is the sprint demo. Again, we're working toward working code. So if we're trying to deliver working code, we should be able to demonstrate that code. And so the demo is an opportunity to show the deliverables to any interested stakeholders. Hopefully all the stakeholders are interested. And lastly is a retrospective. in our organization, the retrospective is kind of like a mini party. The Scrum Master brings in food, and it's a real small thing, but there's a little party, and basically you celebrate, you finish the Scrum, but most importantly, you talk about what went well, what didn't go so well, and what should we do differently next time. One of the important elements of Scrum is the culture of your organization. You've got to have a culture in which you're willing to stand up and say, I messed up. You know, I didn't meet my deadline. I thought I was going to be able to do this in 8 hours, but it took me 3 days and I'm still not done. But you also want to foster a safe environment where you can admit that. Because the idea is you want to get better within each sprint at planning, at estimating, and executing. Okay, the artifacts. The product backlog. Again, all requirements are constantly changing. User stories and feature descriptions are categorized or pulled together and are reprioritized by the product owner before each sprint. The sprint backlog is simply the highest priority items from the product backlog, and those are broken down into individual tasks. As you work through the activities in any sprint, one of the most common graphics that Scrum Masters use to both keep track of and also communicate to people outside the team what's going on is the burn down chart. The burn down chart is effectively, it's real simple, let's say we start with 250 hours. We have a sprint, we say it's going to take us 250 hours to complete that. So we are planning for 250 hours. Then every day, each team member claims their hours and say, here's how much time I spent on each particular task. And then you start basically saying, well, let's assume that after the first day, task number 1001, we planned for 8 hours. And Mary spent 8 hours on that. So we reduce the number of planned hours by 8 hours, and we have a linear, basically we have a line that just says our planned and our actual work is the same. And whenever these two diverge, it means that either there's an impediment that's been encountered, work is being accomplished more slowly than was anticipated, or another way to look at that is the planning was not accurate. In this case, it appears as though for several days there was some impediment when no activity or no progress was being made, and then the impediment was removed or addressed, and now we're starting to make more progress, we're accomplishing more work. There's a lot of different ways to interpret the burn down chart. This is just a very simple implementation. This is actually created from an Excel spreadsheet, so it's not hard to create burn down charts. And then lastly, the working product is the primary sprint deliverable. Okay, so how do we use Scrum? How do we use Agile in Scrum environment? Six easy steps, what I mentioned earlier. Number one, build your product backlog. Your product owner should know what your customer wants, and you have to be able to express that. Number two, organize a collaborative workspace. You've got to have an environment where you're able to work and communicate. It doesn't necessarily have to be a war room. The company I work with actually uses the war room concept, where we basically have taken over several conference rooms and we have developers and analysts and QA people sitting around a big conference table. It's very annoying at first, but as they start being more of a cohesive team, they actually kind of enjoy the process. Plan the first sprint. So if you're going to do this the first time, do the best you can, plan it, and then sprint. Go, do it. Work on it for 2 weeks. Do the work. Track your work, burn down charts, however you want to. But the most important step, especially when you're starting to use Scrum, is to stop. Stop on time. If you didn't get everything finished, that's okay. Figure out what you didn't get finished. Why did you not get it finished? Is your planning poor? Are you just trying to figure out how everything works? It doesn't matter. Just address the issues, do it better next time. And then review, reflect, and repeat. Review what you did or didn't do. Reflect on why you did or didn't do what you did or didn't do, and then go back, do it again. Seems really easy. However, I will say that the right tools can make the process easier. If you're wondering, this is where Roundtable comes in. Sorry?
The microphone went off for a second. Came back.
Oh, that's where Roundtable comes in.
That's what he was trying to get you to do.
Okay, so let's talk just a little bit about Roundtable. I want to be cognizant of the time. I think we're doing pretty well here. Roundtable TSMS, it stands for Total Software Management System, is a team-oriented extension for the OpenEdge development environment. It provides full-blown software configuration management, which Versioning is this. Configuration management is this. It's a piece of it. Versioning is a piece of software configuration management, but configuration management is basically focused on identifying a specific configuration and tracking and controlling its migration as it moves through the product lifecycle. Does anybody currently use Roundtable? Ah, that's great. Awesome, okay. So I won't spend a whole lot of time there because it looks like more than half of you guys already use Roundtable. It's also a set of developer productivity tools, and it does play well with Agile. I'll be honest with you, when I first started looking at this concept, I thought, Roundtable seems to have some of the pieces, and I'll bet if I provided enough good product enhancements that maybe version 12 of Roundtable would be Agile ready. I was really surprised in a very positive way to find out that all the building blocks are there, and the changes that I would recommend to make it really Agile, it's already Agile friendly, but are very, very tiny. We'll talk about those at the very end. So, Roundtable is based on the manufacturing process. And we want to be able to use this manufacturing process to create repeatable processes in the software development genre so that we can continuously increase quality and capture what we're doing well so that we can repeat that. And of course, by increasing quality, we can identify what we don't do well and decrease the activities that do not provide positive ROI. So in Roundtable, we look at it again from the factory standpoint. Roundtable allows us to define the process. So once we define the process, we have the flow. We use our workspace design. We use the workspace sources so that we flow the project all the way from source to completion. We get the ability to apply controls, both security controls and just the organizational controls, to manage changes all the way through the process. And of course, one of the big reasons a lot of people start looking at Roundtable is for compliance issues. We find that Sarbanes-Oxley is a very large driver in many cases. With Roundtable, and this is the slide that we use whenever where we're introducing people to Roundtable, that each one of these workstations would represent a particular workspace in the Roundtable environment. You can either start from development if you're writing everything from scratch, or you can actually have an external workspace, quasi-external, that may be partner source code. Let's say you're a QAD customer. You can actually bring the QAD source code into a workspace and then funnel that into the development environment, which makes it very, very easy to accept updates from QAD. And Roundtable tells you what you've modified that just got upgraded from QAD and says, yeah, here are the two versions, what do you want to do? So it makes it easy to identify and hard to stomp on your own changes. And then finally, we can also include multiple custom development environments. One thing that's not depicted here that I would just kind of point out, in Scrum, all your developers, if you're running multiple sprints, can work in the same development environment, or you can have separate development workspaces and then funnel them together before the final product if you choose to do it that way. Again, with Roundtable, we have the ability to do it either way. So remember, we talked earlier that Agile values individuals and interactions over processes and tools. Roundtable supports Agile better than I thought it would, honestly, but it doesn't enforce Agile. It empowers developers to become, or to employ Agile, rather. Basically, the features fit very nicely into an Agile method because it gives you primary visibility of the tools to create artifacts. So it gives you the ability to see what's going on, how things fit together, and how it flows. And, that's kind of interesting. I can't see the last bullet on the sorry, that was just a minor thing. It's just, I'll work from here. And consistent with each sprint's goal, remember that every sprint's goal, and this is the big deal with Agile, is to focus on what's important. And so the goal of your sprint is not to finish on time. It's not to produce the deliverable. It is to deliver value to the stakeholders. If you don't deliver value to the stakeholders, nothing you do matters. It's important to keep that in mind because when that's in the front of mind, then your activities and your planning flow from that, and that's where the business gets the value. So, collaboration is a cornerstone of Scrum. You can have, of course, physical collaboration or physical work areas. You want to have a work area that does promote organic communication. That's why the war room idea works in some organizations. You always want to be able to quickly exchange ideas, but in the logical development environment, whenever you as a developer or your team member go in and you open up some code and you type some stuff and save it, Where does it save? Is it saved in a local area on your machine, or is it in a place that your team members can easily get a hold of? That's where Roundtable can really help, because Roundtable gives the ability to support, or actually does support, team-oriented development in a way that allows multiple teams to work together, and you get the ability to have your isolated changes that are very easily shared with your other team members. And if you're using, let's say, if you know about the group share status, very, very easy to share your changes and your in-process work with your group, but not share it with all the other groups, the other sprints. You may or may not choose to go that route. The easy way, or the linear workspace approach, of course, goes to development. Then you import all of your changes to test. When you're ready, you import all your changes to production. And you may point out, or you may notice, that I said that waterfall was a very linear activity. So there are linear activities that occur even in Scrum. But typically what will happen is that as developers release pieces of their code for testing, they'll be working on more pieces of code, hopefully in the same sprint, while the QA people have their hands on it and can start testing immediately without impacting what's going on in development. And this is a little bit more of the hybrid method or hybrid model that I was talking about. Another thing you can do with Roundtable very easily is have separate workspaces for each sprint team. This may or may not be something that appeals to you, but it's certainly possible, where each sprint team can have their own development and test environment, and then we funnel those guys into a total QA or maybe even UAT, user acceptance testing environment, to combine the final product. And then the question here becomes, where does the sprint actually end? You can design it pretty much any way that you want. Technically, the sprint should end whenever you reach the production environment. Does anybody run multiple sprints with separate teams working on the same product? Okay. How do you guys handle the output from two different teams? Is it the sprint ends in an integration phase, or is the end the output of the two deliverables from the two teams? Is it integrated later after the sprint?
No, it's integrated as we work on.
Okay. And that's the way, I was about to say the way it should be. I don't want to be that heavy-handed, but I like that approach. That's more consistent with the whole Agile approach. Oh, I'm sorry. The answer was that it's integrated as part of the sprint.
Yeah, we all work from the same workspace.
Okay. So you're using the previous model. If you were using a separate model, then basically the sprint would end at the prod regardless. Okay, artifacts in a roundtable world. So how do we do all this stuff? We talked about a lot of things we want to do. We haven't talked about the hows. Basically, backlog is a list of all the features and bugs. It's a document of some sort of something somebody wants. And in many cases, expressed as a user story, you've probably seen the as a role, I want a goal or desire so that I achieve a benefit. You know, it's the same strategy. In Roundtable, we implement backlog items as tasks, effectively. The product backlog is all the user stories in a product, and the sprint backlog is just the highest priority product backlog items that are pulled into a particular sprint, and that those become the tasks you work on. And in Roundtable, everything is literally a task. So the way we do that, we allow the Roundtable tasks to organize and control all the work, and of course, anytime you modify around or any object in Roundtable, as you know, those of you that use it, has to occur under a task. If you don't have a task that you've selected as your current task, you cannot modify anything in Roundtable. You guys know, of course, you can set the connection parameters on a database. I always have to say that. Other than that, backlog elements are tasks. They're initially owned by, the task for a backlog item initially can be blank, or it can own a document, a docx or a text file, that more fully describes that backlog item. And how you implement that is really up to user preference. For me, I find that the task itself has the notes section where you can put anything that you want in there. But if you want something more formal, if you have some sort of template that you use in Word, you could actually attach that or create that document as part of the task. And as the sprint work progresses, as you modify schema objects or code objects, then you just attach it to that task. And the way we group the tasks together is to use the task group. So initially, and I'm going to show what this looks like in Roundtable, initially we create a task group called Product Backlog. and we create a task for every item on the product backlog. For every sprint, we create a new sprint task group, and we move tasks from the product backlog to the sprint backlog. So if you want to see all of the backlog items, the product backlog actually is the union of the product backlog and all of the sprint backlogs for that particular set of sprints. So it looks something like, the task notations give us the additional details for priority of tasks. Does anybody use task notations currently? Is anyone aware of the task notations functionality in Roundtable? Okay, awesome. All right. Task notations, for some reason, very few people use this, but it's there. It gives a lot of supporting detail for tasks, and it includes everything that you would need. Estimated time, actual time spent worked on a task. You can theoretically have multiple notes or notations for every task. So if you want to break up your work on a daily basis, even though the task may take 3 or 4 days, you can post a note of how much work you did on every day, and it also gives the ability to set priorities. All right, so here's what it looks like. This is the plugin. For Roundtable users, how many are using the plugin, the Architect plugin? All right, what about the GUI? The GUI? All right, good. I would highly recommend, if you're using the GUI Roundtable version, to look at the plugin. It is wicked cool. It's very cool. Oh, it's really kind of funny, because in the South, that's a humorous thing, but I think that's actually a Northeastern comment, or our Northeastern wicked cool. Anyway. I just don't agree. So basically, what I did here was I created a task 27. Now, we haven't gotten to the task groups yet. I'm just creating tasks. And when I create a task, I have the summary, add successful compiles to the compile list. And then my note is, as a development user, I want to show successful compiles in the selected compile utility so that I can see, and I won't read the rest of it, but it's basically a user story, a very simple user story. And I've assigned it to the manager. Jerry is the manager, and Bob, Harry, Patty, and Sysop are programmers. And it's currently work in process. So I just create a task that represents each backlog item. Then I define the product backlog task group. And the items I add to the product backlog task groups are basically all my tasks, because I'm just starting this all brand new. So if I ever want to see the product backlog, it's very easy to go get a list. It's right there. These are all the tasks. I'm ready now to start Sprint 1001. So I created a new task group called Sprint 1001 Backlog. There is a task group manager option. If you right mouse click on a task group, or task rather, and there's an option there for task group manager or task management. And this just allows me to click and then click the arrow to move from one group to another group. And effectively what I did was I took 30, 31, and 32, I think. I forget which way I went with those. No, I took 33, 34, and 35, and I moved them to Sprint. That's what I'm trying to do. So I selected my Sprint 1001 backlog, and it gave me a list of all of the tasks in my workspace, and I just clicked on three of them and moved them over. And the result is now I've moved tasks 33, 34, and 35 from the product backlog to the Sprint backlog. So now that is my Sprint backlog. And at this point, it's just regular old Roundtable. Go in, select your task as your active task, check out or create objects, check out or create objects. Yeah. Okay, check out or create objects and continue work as normal. And then this is the task notations. This is from the GUI. I want to kind of mix things up a little bit. The previous windows were from the plugin. This is from the GUI. This is what it looks like. But a task notation, you have task, priority, estimated hours, actual hours, and so on and so forth. You have a description of the work for a particular task, which may be incremental steps within the actual user story. And you can also have task notations for each object. So if you're working on one task and you have five programs you're writing or modifying, you could theoretically have a notation describing what you did on each object. So this is kind of the glue that pulls everything together. So with the task notations, we have all the ability to understand priority and work accomplished on tasks. Task groups gives the ability to bring tasks together into sprints, and we have all the underlying structure that we need to manage Scrum projects within Roundtable. And then this is a little bit larger version of the burndown chart. Now, I'll be very honest, there is no burndown chart you can get from one click in Roundtable yet. This was created from an Excel spreadsheet. It's very short. Today, it's a short hop to basically export data in Excel and create this. This is one of my enhancement requests. So, the benefits of using Roundtable, yes, Mr. No, Ledbetter. I'm sorry.
I had a question.
Yes.
Where do you get your time to show your burnout? And I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm jumping through this really quick, but in the Roundtable task notations, you have estimate and actual hours. And so what you would do is, this is not the greatest interface. By the way, this program is provided in source code. No.
Say it again.
All right, this program was provided along with your Roundtable license. You have source code for this program, so you can tweak this if you want to. But the idea is, this is a very, it's a wonderful generic entry. For Agile, we probably want to string this down just a tad to make it a little bit easier. But the idea is you have estimated hours, how much time you actually spend on it, and this is where the burndown information would come from.
Okay.
Yes?
If you have QA people working with a team with developers, how do you manage the tasks for the QA people, or is it the same task?
Excellent question. If you have QA people working with developers, which hopefully you will, how do you manage their tasks, or is it part of the same task? There's a couple different ways to do that. One of the enhancements, and I think there's three enhancements that I'm asking for to make this, the next generation, more Agile friendly. But one is task dependencies. And effectively, we can do this now by... What's that?
I said Thomas can speak to that for hours on end.
Absolutely. Oh, and we agree. I mean, we're definitely in agreement, and that's something that will likely be coming. I would like to see that coming. I can't make any commitments. But the idea is with task dependencies, we can actually do that now through the user ref field. If you provide the parent task number in the user ref field and you keep that as a standard, it's not enforced, but if you keep that as a standard, then you can relate with reports. You can easily create a hierarchy. But getting to more of an answer to your question, the QA people could create their tasks. And if they're going to be working primarily in the test workspace, they would create their tasks in test workspace for any work that they need to have accomplished. And then if they... Yep?
I was going to ask when you were done.
Okay. So yes, they would have separate tasks, but you can keep them... They would be part of the same task group. So it's all under the same sprint. And if you use the idea of a QA task to test the development from task number 1, 2, 3, 4, then you would put 1, 2, 3, 4 as the user reference field value in the QA task. So there's a little bit of manual entry right now. But that's how you would link the two tasks together. Does that answer your question? Not sufficiently, but does it answer?
Well, yeah, and I'm trying to figure out how does promotion fit into the sprint?
That's the thing with this. That's with the task groups. That's what's cool about task groups. You can associate, are you familiar with the different shared tasks? There's task, central, group, public. A task group, you can actually associate a physical location with that task group. So when you're trying to share the changes you've made to that task with the rest of your team, you can share the changes in that task just to the group. So your QA guys, they can be testing your application and using the changes that are in.
So you don't have to actually promote to a different.
Exactly.
Space. Right.
You don't have to promote them until they're committed, until they're a little more formal.
So the net is, if you didn't catch all that interchange, the idea is that with using these task groups, you can promote code changes to a shared group directory, and you don't have to promote to another workspace if you don't want to at that moment. Yes?
But if you are
Right.
Because once the task gets completed, you've checked in your code, and you start reporting things, then you can't start anything. You can't add additional information to that task.
Right. There is no current facility, a direct facility right now, for looking at a task and knowing whether it's been tested or not in the testing workspace. And that's what Thomas is alluding to, correct? That's also something that we're discussing, asking for. Please. So, and by the way, the number of changes, I know I've already said this 3 or 4 times, but the number of changes is very, very small to really get us into the ability to have related tasks with multiple statuses so that we can easily keep track of forward and backward what's happened, what's QA doing, has a particular modification been tested. We can actually do that somewhat with task notations, but it's a little kludgy. It's not where it should be yet. But again, as I mentioned earlier, the richness of the capability of Roundtable to be able to move into an agile Scrum environment and still have the level of support it does without just adding and bolting on a lot more software, I was impressed with. I thought it was going to take a lot more work to kind of bolt on some functionality, and most of it is already there. Okay, we're getting close. Yeah, I'm doing all right. So basically, I will read you all the Agile benefits using Roundtable, but you get the ability to manage the whole process within an existing tool that is integrated into the OpenEdge development environment. And one of the nice things about anything that you do in Roundtable is audited. Everything that occurs in Roundtable, any change to any object, has to be under a task. It's assigned an event number, and you've got tons of information of who did what, when, and why. And auditors love that. I actually had a company that I helped implement Roundtable for the specific reason of being Sarbanes-Oxley compliant, because their auditors were just beating them up. And so they were, once we got it implemented, they said, what do we show the auditors? Said, here are the reports, give those to the auditors. A week later, they came back and said, can we have you kind of modify the reports, because the auditors are saying this is just too much information. Yes. It wasn't bad information. They just said, this is too many details. We don't need that much level of detail. I've never heard an auditor say that before, but that was pretty good. All right. And lastly, so these are the future work requests. So basically, these are not commitments. I'm not saying that this is exactly what's going to be in version 11.4 or 12 of Roundtable, but these are the requests. Import by task group. Currently, when you do import changes, you import by task or by release or by workspace, but there's no easy way to simply click on a sprint and say, import all the tasks under this task group. But right now what you can do is you can sort by user ref, and so if you're using user ref with the sprint ID, then you can easily look at them and go click, 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 import these guys. So it's pretty easy, but it'll be easier task group. We also need some new reports that are tailored to tracking Agile activities, or Scrum activities, should say. And then finally, more granular or detailed task notation information. That task notation functionality is pretty cool, but we need to kind of have that data entry screen tailored just a tad bit more. And this really is not an enhancement request per se, because we have source code to that, and that's something that I'm likely going to circle back and make some changes to without having to ask the formal development path. And lastly, the one thing I don't have listed here is the task interactions or the task dependencies and additional statuses. So, we know that Scrum is one of the most popular development models that's being used today, because it focuses on delivering high customer value. It's not on producing a product, it's producing value to your customer. Roundtable gives the ability to manage the process, even if you're using the Scrum development model. So the recommendation is, explore Roundtable if you're not using it. If you are using it, look at some of the features we talked about today. It has a lot of flexibility. Okay, so that will conclude the formal portion. Any questions? We have 2 minutes left, and I'll get you guys out of here on time. Any questions that you have not fronted so far?
The task notifications, you can have multiple task notations, per task, right?
Yes, you can have multiple notations per task. as many as you want. It's theoretically unlimited. Is it probably integer?
Yeah, the task notations table, you can add to it if you want to. We're never going to delete it or do anything to it. It's just kind of a basic framework, so you can add additional fields to it. But yeah, you can. It's one to many. You can have as many notations as you want per task. And all the reports are in source as well. In case you don't know that, so if you ever need to modify any reports to give you more information about the task or the notation, they're all.
Good point. There's a lot of source code that you get with Roundtable. We should tinker around with it. Well, not tinker around with it, but go look at what's there. Okay, sorry. All right, I won't go there. Any other questions? Guys, thanks a lot for your time. Enjoy the conference, and I guess I'll see most of you guys tonight at the farm, right? Thanks a lot.